The state plans a new mental hospital. How significant is this change in policy? A record year for job creation, tax amnesty proves successful, and Indiana Muslims declare loyalty to America. That plus plans for an air race in Indianapolis and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 18, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the governor announced plans to open a new state mental health hospital in Indianapolis. The Indiana Neurodiagnostic Institute will be located on the campus of Community Hospital East. It will feature 159 beds and serve 1,500 patients a year beginning in 2018. Mike Pence says the new hospital will focus on psychiatric illnesses, brain diseases, and addiction.
We cannot arrest our way out of this problem. The reality is that drug abuse and addiction must also be addressed through expanding our capacity and our treatment options in the state of Indiana.
Will this new approach make a difference? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, this is a bold move, isn't it?
Oh, I think it is. I think it's a good move. I think very progressive move. There are a number of other steps that need to be done, too. I mean, the needle exchange has got to be statewide, and we've got to deal with the root causes of a lot of this addiction, the rural and the urban poverty and lack of success in education through no preschool. But I still think this is a very progressive approach on his part, and I hope that this is the first step in changing the sentencing guidelines for people accused of using drugs, too, because he's right. Treatment is the answer for this. It isn't incarceration at whatever it is, $55,000 a head a year.
Well, and he says the idea is to give judges options. Where you can send somebody for treatment instead of incarceration. It's replacing LaRue Carter Hospital eventually, but it's really more than that. It's a different kind of treatment. Right?
It is. It's a whole new model for Indiana in particular. And, you know, it's 159 beds, $120-some million of investment, serve about 1,500 patients a year. It should reduce the length of stay time from 2 years to 30 to 45 days, and so that gives us an opportunity to treat a lot more people. And when they return home, particularly in the rural areas, we've got a staff of about, at least the plan is, to have a staff of about 18 psychiatrists, or strike that, 10 psychiatrists to serve people on an outpatient basis. And the great thing about it is it's right there inside and on the campus of a tertiary hospital with very strong emergency room capacity, so that the issues that might have been at LaRue Carter and even some other of our mental health facilities around the state where you have to transport patients and you have issues, you can have that taken care of right there on the spot. And this is a brand new treatment model. It's a big, big deal.
The state has been closing mental health facilities since the 70s or 80s, and opening one is a huge change.
Oh, it's a complete reversal in course, as you suggest, Jim. I remember that was a regular story that would come up every, almost an episodic story, which state hospital is now slated for closure. And it happened quite a bit during the 80s and in the 90s, and the notion being, and it wasn't just in Indiana, but it was actually, I think, thought to be the best practice nationwide to get people closer to home, treatment in their communities. But this really is, I think, a good thing for Indiana. Everybody in Indiana should be proud of it. It's not just the latest and greatest, but the notion of actually having more intensive diagnostic capabilities on the front end, as John suggested, when you take an average stay of 2 years and you can potentially reduce it to 30 days, that really is something. The real challenge, I guess, will be making sure that there is that infrastructure statewide to support it after the fact.
Also interesting is the fact that they're using bonding. They're borrowing money to do this. That's not something that Mike Pence seemed inclined to do a year or two ago.
Well, I think, they had done several projects where they paid cash. They got as much out of it as they could. And so I think from a financing mechanism, it's not a bad thing necessarily to bond for this. And I think it's a recognition. $120 million is a lot of money. And I think that they may be looking beyond a little bit as well. A lot of those places that were closed were residential places. And sounds like what we've come to in this new treatment model is a hybrid where you have shorter stays. You might have those 30-day stays, whereas you would have had longer stays before. And so I think if it's successful, we may see this replicated in other parts of the state in order to decentralize some of those services as well.
And it's a new facility.
Many
of the facilities that were closed before
were
dated back, hundreds of years.
And
they were terrible. They were terrible treatment models. The focus, it seems to me, the mental health part of this is obviously important, but the addiction part of it seems to me is critically important because it does give us options.
Yeah. And the FSSA director is a psychiatrist. Is that why this is happening?
Well, Dr. Wernert, John Wernert, is a psychiatrist, and this has been a big, big push of his. He's worked very closely with the governor to think through this. They've been working on this for at least 2 years, maybe more, to kind of think through it, understand what to do, evaluate the LaRue Carter situation. And I think the financing piece of this, which, if we had to wait for the $120 million and do it in a different way, it then puts off the establishment of such a new model. And, with the issues we have, and I think Ann mentioned it right on target, particularly on the addiction side, we really can't wait much longer. No. We need to accelerate
the
effort.
And the interest rates are obviously as low as they're going to be.
I'm very, very pleased that Governor Pence pursued this.
All right, more people are now working in the state of Indiana than ever before, and the governor says that means that he's accomplished one of his first-term goals. Mike Pence celebrated at the State House this week with a series of jobs announcements. He was joined by representatives of 17 companies who plan to create more than 600 jobs with the help of state incentives. Here's Jim Schellinger of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation.
This year is the most successful, the largest year ever in economic development in the state of Indiana since the IEDC was formed in 2005.
We set a new record in total deals. 323 companies around the state and around the nation are going to be growing in the state of Indiana in the years ahead.
John Hammond, how much of that is a function of the overall economy, and how much of it is due to the actions of state government?
Well, I think they're highly aware, as I was when I worked in state government and worked for a governor, that state government can help on the margins with efforts, and maybe 10% or so. A lot of it, certainly, the economy. We've had a lot of good fortune in the state in the last couple of years. The unemployment rate is way down. The interesting thing about these jobs, at least as I read through this, over half, about 163 of these companies, I think they supply maybe about 13,000 of the jobs that are noted here. They're at $62,200. That's over the state average, of course, and that's a pretty strong high wage set of metrics. Which I think is a great thing.
It's what Ann's been talking about for months.
Right, but jobs by themselves are not enough. Not if you have to take two or three of them to pay your mortgage. So if they're good paying jobs.
Which a large number of these are, that's good.
Right. But obviously, John's right. They can help around the margins. But the overall national economy under Barack Obama has done remarkably well lately. And that's a function of what's happening in all of the states. So it's good. And I'm glad they're good paying jobs. And I hope we'll stop making war on working people by trying to undermine the unions and the teachers so that they can all benefit.
And I would just go back and just say the 10% that you spend time on in state government, in this case the IEDC, and with the help of the governor and our incentive packages, actually count for an awful lot. And so it's been a lot of hard work, and you measure it over the course of the last 30 years of this kind of activity. Mm-hmm. This is a record year, and it's a pretty good one. I think it's a very strong
well,
year.
Well, and I think we're going to hear a lot about that in the campaign next year.
I think this is the governor's response to the critics from the RFRA situation. And his claim will be that, look, it didn't damage Indiana in any way because we've still got all of this economic activity going on. I think there's a good rebuttal to that, and I think you'll hear that often as well. The jobs and the economy are all intertwined, and it is good that these jobs are coming, and it is good that a high percentage of them are well-paying jobs. But I think that it'll be interesting during the campaign to see how that plays out and how this claim is received and how the opponents are able to play against it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He's gonna make the argument to those people who say that RFRA is an economic problem, take a look at the jobs.
Oh, this is a great inoculation, you might say, politically, against what will certainly be complaints about the economy. You know, it could have been even better. It could have been... I'm looking at the crystal ball here. I don't think it takes much of being a fortune teller to know that the criticism will be about the jobs that were created or not, high-wage jobs, although this certainly blunts that. The notion that it's still there are large pockets of...
They're creating some high-wage jobs. Yeah, they're not changing the overall average.
Right. But
the
I will
average
say,
is not going to change at all.
When you look at the statistics overall,
pretty low.
Whether it's state... because of, precipitated by state action or just the rising tide of the U.S. and global economy, it's still good if you're Mike Pence.
Yeah, but do you think the effort's not worth it?
No, I think the effort's worth it. I think it's also important to realize that we're still, the majority of Hoosiers are still sinking. We're going lower on the national average in terms of income. These jobs are good, but some of them aren't coming for 9 years.
I'll tell you what, look, we can't rest on this one announcement, right?
I hope not.
No, and certainly they won't, and no other governor ever has. And so it's going to take some time to turn that around. You still have a very low unemployment rate in Indiana and record number of people in work. So it's a great things are going well.
Record number of people in work, John,
right.
is like taking credit of the birth rate, for God's sake. Population's grown.
We also have a large number of people who are out of the workforce, who have left the workforce
for
completely.
Good.
And it's interesting to note that last year at this time, he was announcing almost twice the number of jobs that he announced from this year.
Right.
Time
and they
now.
Weren't 9 years ahead.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, who or what is most responsible for job growth in Indiana? Your choices are A, Governor Pence, B, the national economy, C, business leaders, or D, all of the above. Last week's question, is Donald Trump's rhetoric presidential? 14% said yes, 76% said no, 10% said maybe it's time for a new definition. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. South Bend, Fort Wayne, and Evansville won bids this week to receive regional cities grants. The $42 million grants come from the Indiana Economic Development Corporation and are intended to pay for infrastructure or amenities that could help the regions attract business and people. The money comes from the recently completed tax amnesty, which collected nearly $50 million above projections. John Ketzenberger, first of all, how do you explain the success of tax amnesty?
Well, there were a lot of taxpayers who obviously were behind the eight ball and took the advantage of not having to pay penalties or interest. So it was a very successful amnesty program by quite a bit more than they anticipated. I think that that gives them the option to do this, but I think that Speaker Bosma was very clear the other day when he was talking about this program that the administration is going to have to clear it with the General Assembly first to get that extra money released because they'd only planned on two of these bids.
Right. They planned on two grants. They want to create a third, and they're going to say that it's coming from the source that they'd identified, but, this is the second tax amnesty, and it's been the same drill. They make a projection, which is a way to reduce expectations, and then it comes in much
it's like
higher.
A cynical approach.
I think it's accurate.
It's found money, I guess. It's money that theoretically could be put to this use, but as has been suggested, the governor and the administration can't do it unilaterally. But now, having done this with some fanfare and identifying the three winning regions, it would probably be difficult not to fund that in some manner. So I would think it's safe to assume it will happen.
Okay, so it's the three largest cities outside of Indianapolis, and they just happen to be geographically located, so you're covering almost every corner of the state. Some people looked at this and said it's a participation trophy.
No. I'll tell you what, this is one of the best things we've been involved in. Some of you may have participated in these regional meetings that took place over a year ago. They have brought in everybody in these communities to kind of figure out a plan for growth for the future. And what this is a talent play. This is a play to improve the quality of place, retain and attract talent here, to help grow this economy, and particularly by a region. And you know, it was such a helpful exercise. Even those who did not get in the final three still plan to go ahead and execute on their plans. And I think that is a terrific thing, because on the eve of the bicentennial celebration year, what could be a better approach to looking towards the future as you celebrate your past? This is a tremendous, tremendous program, and I give the governor a lot of credit for it, and the leadership of the IEDC. They've done an excellent job of putting this together and selecting. These are three areas that have found a way regionally to make things happen, to get rid of ancient geographic and political boundaries, and think about on a broader scale a strategy for an improved economy.
It's hard to be critical.
Well, the only problem with it is it's the typical Mike Pence approach, a one-shot deal. You don't provide enough to do the complete job, and you only give a certain amount of money one time. I mean, I hope it generates job growth. I hope it generates a resurgence in each one of these communities. And I hope that Speaker Bosma and the governor can speak to each other again after one of them calling the other a liar. So it's an interesting.
I'm not sure.
It's
I
interesting
heard
when
those
you
words
have it
from the speaker.
When you have the implication was there from the governor, but the interesting thing is the dysfunction in the with supermajorities.
There's never a dust up at the state house that Ann misses.
Well, I mean, shouldn't we stay on top of those things?
I think,
but that is a little bit of a distraction in the midst of what is really good news for those three communities.
And what about the other ones that needed just as much?
And I'll tell you
what about the local roads?
I think you're going to find a phase two and a three and a four. I really
are we going to do enough with
this
the highways so the bridges extremely stop
popular
collapsing?
And important
moving
program.
On, yeah. Moving on. State Senator Mike Delf conducted a state house news conference along with a group of Muslim Americans this week. The senator said the purpose was to open a dialogue with Muslim Americans. The conference comes in the wake of terror attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, as well as calls from Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump to ban all Muslims from entering the country. Here's Senator Delf.
I'm trying to remind the public that we have patriotic American citizens who are Muslims, just like they are. And we need to embrace them.
This is the first step, as far as I'm concerned, meeting with you guys and talking to it. And the next step beyond that is to go to your neighbors and say, hey, I'm a Muslim, and I'm a good person.
And that's Dr. Saad Khairy, John Schwanis. Is that a good move?
Yeah. As we were watching the video, Jim, I was thinking this is an atypical show, because I think we're at topic four, and everything we've heard so far has been fundamentally good and upbeat. Maybe it's the season. I don't know. But it's an odd show. I'm waiting for somebody to throw out some red meat here and get angry. But it's I guess we did have that, Ann. I'm sorry. But it's
I'm not angry, are you?
Make your point.
It was a good thing, because we've had so much. It's a conversation that needs to take place. A lot of people. This articulates, I think, people's views that you can't, pick your cliche, painting with a broad brush, or lumping everybody in together. There are good people, and as the doctor here pointed out, he doesn't view the people, the extremists and the terrorists who have committed some of these heinous acts, as even members of the same faith that he recognizes.
Right.
So, and I compliment Mike Delf for putting a spotlight on that.
All right, but Delf also said that he's troubled by the governor's treatment of Syrian refugees, and he may do something about that in the General Assembly, so this may not be all everybody getting along.
It's interesting that Senator Delf has done this, and I think it's very consistent with his positions on many things, because he has professed very strongly. He's a Christian, and he holds those values, and a lot of people believe that a Christian should be welcoming, And so I think it's in stark contrast to what the critics of the governor have said. And I think that by him doing this, he's helped push that forward. And it's important because this is a dangerous time, especially for people who are Muslim or African American or Hispanic, because of a lot of the rhetoric that's been unleashed on the national level. And it's good to ratchet these things down. And congratulations to Senator Delf for doing that.
Does the message get through, though?
I think sometimes it gets through. I think that the worst part of this is that it had to be done.
Right.
You know, that the rhetoric from Donald Trump and some of the rest of the Republicans on the national level has been so inflammatory that people feel threatened, that good, peace-loving, observant Muslims feel the need to pledge their loyalty to the U.S. What are we coming to under those circumstances? But this certainly can't hurt, and it needs to be repeated over and over again, because people, and there have been interviews of Muslims that are observant who have been harassed by people, and that's just not, it's not only not acceptable, it's un-American.
Also helped Senator Delf do a little reputation repair.
Yeah, for some it might be counterintuitive that he would actually walk into this picture and say, this is something we need to stand up as a leader and point out. And I think most Republicans would support exactly what Mike Delf is saying. And most, in fact, all responsible Republican leaders would denounce some of the things that have been said recently.
All right, Joe Hogsett says that when he becomes mayor, he won't be making decisions based on politics. The Democratic mayor-elect spelled out what he called a new approach in a convention center speech to an annual legislative conference and influential audience. He predicted that some of them would not be comfortable with his approach.
It may even anger members of my political party. But I did not run to be, nor was I elected, mayor of the Democratic Party. I ran to be and was elected to serve as mayor of all of Indianapolis.
And Delaney, as mayor, you need to make some decisions based on politics, don't you?
Well, a few. But frankly, at the local level of government, particularly a mayor, 95% of the decisions that are made are not partisan at all. I mean, there may be some overall direction to policy that could be seen as partisan. But, I mean, he's right. Indianapolis is facing a multitude of challenges from no preschool all the way up to the roads and not enough police to combat crime. He needs all the help he can get.
All right, but the next day he went out and appointed three Democrats to key positions in his administration.
Understandable, but he also appointed the former public safety director, Greg Ballard, right, as the chief of police.
And he's got a Republican on his transition team.
Yeah, think about this, though. 50 years ago almost, another mayor, young, bold-thinking Republican, Dick Lugar, came into office, made a lot of changes. A lot of Republicans then thought, I don't know if this guy's a Republican. He may be more of a Democrat because of some of the inroads he was trying to make in the wake of a lot of racial tension in this country, and inroads with the African-American community, et cetera. And so he thought big, acted boldly, and executed well. And that's, I think I take Mayor-elect Hogsett's word for what it is, which is I think he's going to try to govern all the community and be a mayor for everyone in Indianapolis, just like Dick Lugar was. And I think that's a good example. And I think he aspires to model after those kinds of examples.
That's a good example to follow. All right, finally, there's a new race coming to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Red Bull Air Race. A map shows where the race involving airplanes will take place. The purple area is where the planes will fly. They're kept away from spectators between turns 3 and 4, and they only leave the track to fly over the golf course, not the neighborhoods. IMS President Doug Bowles said the pilots have thousands of hours of acrobatic flying experience, and Bowles said IMS wouldn't sign up for the event if they didn't trust it to be safe for everyone involved.
If you think about the safety when we have an accident here with an IndyCar, it's pretty similar. And all of the crash simulations that folks at the Air Race Series have done, make us feel very comfortable that even in the event that something like that happened, that it would be isolated only to the aircraft itself.
John Hammond, will that be a bigger draw than MotoGP?
You know, I think it might be. Talking to John Ketzenberger before the show, this takes us back historically to its beginnings. We had biplane races in and around the 500 track at that time. So Yeah, it could be a big draw. And it's an example of Mark Miles and Doug Bowles and the leadership at the IMS to think through about how to draw better, bigger crowds and make that a viable venue.
I think it's a bold move.
It's a bold move, but it's a great use of the facility. And if it brings thousands of people to Indianapolis, it's a win-win situation.
Yes. See, the record's intact. Five topics or whatever it's been, all of them pluses.
Happy holidays.
Put this in the record book.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible. We'll be right back.